Hi everybody.
Hello.
Lovely Susan. Nice turnout. Lovely people. Okay, I'm Stephen Blake. I help people remove problems out of their life, mainly in the form of thoughts. And thoughts, even though they're just thoughts, are often more painful than physical pain. And I'm going to explain why all that happens. And quite often, a lot of our pain comes from the past. Because in the present time, I mean, what's happening is happening. But usually, the pain that we've got is usually from what we've left behind. And so that's what I'm going to talk about today. Okay, everybody hear me all right?
Yes, thank
you. Okay, so there's a few things here. First of all, I'd like to explain about...
Hi.
Sorry. No problem. What we've handed out is a few things. So there's a leaflet from me. There is a green form that if you could fill in just a few ticky boxes. We've got plenty of pens. Yeah. There's pens and clipboards and all sorts of things I'll hand out at the end. It's just a few ticky boxes to feed back to the people who run the organisation, just so they'll let me speak again. You only need to do the ticky boxes if you want to put some comments, that's up to you. The other thing is a prize draw in there. And the reason for the prize draw is it helps me as well as it helps you. So you can win a session, 50% off a session with me, or you can win a CD of your choice to deal with what particular issue it is. And the purpose of it is to actually, that you tell me what problems you've got so that I produce the right CDs. So actually, in many respects, you'll get a CD suited for you. Okay, because you're the one that's telling me that that's what you need. Right, okay. So, the way the mind works is that... I always simplify things, so I'm not going to talk about the brain and different bits of it, which is how they found out all these things recently, so we can deal with the mind better. But basically, what there is two sides to the mind. There's the conscious bit, that's the bit we're aware of, the bit we think with, the bit we think we're clever with. And then there's the unconscious, or the unaware bit of the mind. And that's running 99.9% of everything we do. Because at some time, we've actually fed it a program that says, this is how I like to do things. And as soon as we do anything enough times... it actually gets fed to the unconscious brain and it goes, I'll take over that from you. And to give you a very good example, when you drive a car, the first time you get in it, you have the clutch and the accelerator to do, and you go, right, and the guy says, right, you know, put it in gear, you've got your clutch down, now you have to press your accelerator down, but you have to let this one up. Very illogical, isn't it? Putting one down, pressing one up. And then he goes, mirror, and you go, whoa, I'm pressing this one down. I can't do mirror at the same time. But you can now, can't you? Because after a while of doing that, and you even used to jerk down the road like this. And if I paid you £1,000 now to jerk a car down the road, I bet you couldn't do it. It would be almost impossible. Except for those of you that are still learning to drive. So everything that we learn, we actually pass over to the unconscious. It goes, I'll have that job as well now. Now, your unconscious obviously has programs in when you're born, so it knows various things. Some of it forgets how to do. So, for instance, babies of a certain age know how to swim. You throw a very small child in a pool, and it'll come up swimming. But you leave it too long, and they drown. But, yeah. So don't try this one at home. Okay, so... but most of the things that we do, so your heart's been running every second of every day since you were born. Your lungs have worked every second. Every cell in your body knows what job it has to do. And it talks to the brain, and the brain talks to it. And anything we tell ourselves, every single cell in the body hears. So when we get bad news, you reach for the phone, you get some really bad news, and you have... oh my God. And your partner can see you've had bad news. And every cell in your body goes, oh, for goodness sake. And it all closes down. So I'm just going to do a little experiment with you. I want you to all think happy thoughts now. Okay? So put your shoulders back. Think happy thoughts. Okay? And when you're doing that, I want you to keep the happy thought, but I want you to close in on yourself and I want to put your body down a bit. And try and keep that happy thought. Just go for it. Put your head forward, reach your body in, close your body up. Tighten up over everything. Try and keep happy. Can't do it, can you? But while you're down there, let's do the reverse then. Think a sad thought. Not too sad. Right? So think a sad thought while you're down there. And then bring your head back and your shoulders up. Open your body out. Try and keep the sad thought. You're not very good at this, are you? Please take a seat. No problem. So, the way the mind and body connection, you can't break it, you know, totally intertwined. So when people talk about, oh no, that's a physical illness, or no, that's all in your mind, there's none of that. It's all part of the same structure. Right? So everything that we do that upsets or depresses us closes in. And I always think of depression as like really closing in to the point where it's like, and nobody else can come in here with me either. You just won't let anybody in. Now, we don't go see people going down the street like this, but that's happening on the inside of them. So the very tension you have to do to get there is what's happening on the inside. And most of these things are brought on by programs that are already running. So this is my explanation here. If you've been on holiday, you know, you hand your case in and then you get to the other end and you have to go and fetch it again. So this is the conveyor belt at the airport. Now the person loading up all the baggage that you have on your conveyor belt is 5-year-old you. So 80% of everything we know about life we learnt before we were 6. Now, I want you to, not very big maths this, but I want you to take 5 off your age. Right, you don't have to tell me the answer. And that's how out of date 80% of the programmes that run your life are. Okay. Anybody here employ people? 80% of your employees are working at the age of 5 as well. That explains quite a lot, doesn't it? So, if you can imagine that this baggage reclaim, now normally we look for, you know, oh, I've got that blue case, but I've got the red thing around the handle or whatever. But every case on this conveyor belt is yours. And everything that we've ever thought, or every situation we've been in, where it didn't resolve nice and neatly at the end, we aren't able to put it away. We haven't dealt with it. And we've all been to films where or seen a film on TV, where you watch it and it sort of carries on in this massive plot and you're trying to work it all out. And then it ends in such a way that you think, well, how does that finish? You know, did she kill him or did she marry him? And the brain keeps working on it. And in fact, if you see a little clip of that film in 10 years' time, you'll straight away go to, oh, I've got to watch this again, because how the hell did that work out? Well, your brain does this with everything you've ever done in life. And if things close off nice and neatly and you learn the lesson from it, you're able to move on and the brain doesn't bother with it anymore. But anything where you've almost asked it the question, like, what went wrong there, it'll keep working on it. And it keeps working on it, working on it, working on it. So we have to close off these questions, which I'm going to come back to in a minute. And when we have, let's call this an emotional suitcase, so, or a relationship suitcase. So we have a row with a partner, and it's triggered off by something that even we think is, how the hell did we get to that point? But we get to the point where we sort of explode. And it's because we've got all this emotional baggage that we carry around that we've had forever. All the things that never got closed off. All the relationships we were ever in that never finished right, or we're not quite sure why it finished or whatever, is carried around. So when something new happens that's to do with relationships, we wait for the relationship bag to come round. It's in there and it's certain. And as soon as it does, come on in. As soon as it does, it's not about the thing that's just happened. We've lifted the lid from it and we've stirred this big pot up and we've gone, oh, they've said that to me. I've heard that before. And last time it did this. And then the time before that it was horrible and, you know, and you stir it up. And then you feed back to your partner all the crap that you've ever had. And they're going, what did I say? And they have no idea. Because it's nothing to do with what they've just said. That's only the tiniest bit of it. So today is about how do you clear that out. So it's about actually completing that loop and finding an ending for it. So I talked about this thing of closing up and opening up. Because you're not going round the street like that, to that extent, but you are on the inside. So all your muscles and everything tense up and they go into this sort of, oh no, I've been here before. And it's going on the inside. So you can still look, you know, happy and contented and everything else, but on the inside it's doing that. Or you might constantly have an anxiety. You're not quite sure what it is, but there's this sort of, you're waiting for something to happen. And particularly when good times happen, we're waiting for the bad bit to happen. And so life is full of peaks and troughs, you know. And we should enjoy the highs and we should learn from the lows. And then, you know, and if you had a life that was just sort of bland and in the middle, that's like being drugged up so you don't feel anything. So it's quite nice we have these highs and lows. But the tendency is when we get in a low, we can't actually see out of it. And it's not like being in the bottom of the valley, it's like being in the well at the bottom of the valley, and we look up and we can only see a glimmer of light. And we can't really remember what happened before, and we can't predict the great future, so we get into this depressive state. And then when we get towards this wonderful time that's coming, and it should carry on for, you know, for up here and round here, we start worrying about, well, every time something good happens, something comes along and ruins it. And as soon as we start thinking like that, instead of going up there and then coming down, we actually cut the top off the mountain. And we start to come down the other side again. And then we wonder why we're always in these problematic states. Whereas we should be allowing the good stuff to happen. And whatever things are, good or bad, it will pass. You know? And we don't go, you know, oh, it's great, it's my birthday today, oh, but it will pass, you know. Just enjoy the moment. So it's all about the here and now. Every second of our lives has always been now. So when I started talking 15 minutes ago, that was now. But now it's the past already. So you can learn from things and carry it forward with you. Or you can just accept that this is where you are now. Now, I deal a lot with people who get really screwed up about the past and things like that. And my first thing with them is, if I'm going to help you, you have to accept where you are now. So you're all sat in here listening to me, and everything you've ever done in your life has led you to this point here. Right? Because if you made a few different turns, you wouldn't live in this area, you wouldn't have heard about this, you wouldn't be interested in it, and so on. So everything that you've done has led you to being sat here today in front of me. And everything I've done in my life has led me to being able to do what I do today. So every morning for me starts with gratitude about all the good things in my life. And then I work my way through a list of qualities and things that I want to continue. And then I end up saying, and thank you for all the shit in my life. Which is a silly thing to say, but I wouldn't be a good therapist if I'd not been through it. And then I always end up with the final sentence, which is, however, I have enough anecdotes now to keep me going for a lifetime, so don't give me any more. Okay. Right, so we have past, present and future. If we live just in the future all the time, oh, it's going to be good when I get to here, then you're actually living without that. So I'll be happy when, I'll be happy when. And you get something and you think, oh yeah, I've got the sports car, I've got the big house now, I'll be happy now. Lasts a few weeks, and then you know you see somebody else with a bigger sports car, a bigger house, or whatever. It doesn't last; it's immaterial. But you could have been happy here. You could have took it with you, and you—if you get your big house, or you don't get your big house, or you get sports car—you're still happy. So why not be happy now all the time? Because happiness doesn't reside outside you. It's not somewhere else. It's not somebody else. You have it within you. And to grow happiness, all you do is you let it out. And you share it with other people. And it's one of the few things you can give away that doesn't deplete the store of it. So the more you give away happy, the more you have. And people who aren't happy or are loving, it's because they don't give it out. So they don't get it back. It's what you reap, you reap. You just let it out of you, and it doubles in quantity. Okay, so you need to accept where you are today, because your map of the world, if you think about where you should have been, so a lot of people do this where they get really rich or whatever, and then they lose it all, and some people just go on to make it again. But other people get trapped in the, I used to have a big house, I used to have this, I used to have that, I used to have this. And then you lock yourself in that sort of torment. You're probably better off than most people on the planet. But you live in the, well, I was better off. So to get people to move into where they need to be, you have to get them to accept. But they are there now. They haven't still got the millions. Because otherwise they're trying to set off on their map from a different place that doesn't exist. So it's not about liking where you are now. So there might be things about you you want to change. There might be things about your circumstances you want to change. So I'm not saying you have to like it, because quite often we have to sort of dislike something that we're doing or be upset by it to change. But accept where you are now and just say, yes, I am here. This is where I am. This is where I'm starting from. And then you can move from it. And you can move in any direction that you want to. But it's all about where you want to be, not where you think other people think you ought to be. So I just want to talk about that for a moment, about this idea that what other people think of you. And I have one sentence on this. It's none of your damn business. It's of no interest to you whatsoever what other people think of you. Because if you think about this really carefully, if I think that you think I'm something, that's all come from my brain. None of it has come from your brain. Right? So all I can be doing is projecting what I think about myself onto you. Which is great if I think... If I think you think I'm confident, that's because I think I'm confident, so I'm projecting that to you. But if it's the opposite, if you think, oh, I'm unworthy of anything, that is exactly what you're projecting in another person's head. So as soon as you think everybody thinks you're unworthy or, you know, lower than them or whatever, that's not what they think. That's what you think about you. Okay? Now, I had this with somebody. On a regular basis, she kept telling me that she knew what other people thought. And I kept saying, well, you don't. You know, you're absolutely crap as a mind reader. You really are. And I kept proving it to her. And then she said one day, she said, well, I can prove it now. She said, because somebody told me that. And I went, ah, but just let's see whose brain that came out of. That came over to the other person's brain. So what she said about you is actually what she thinks about herself. So you can't win with this one. Just accept that what other people think about you has nothing to do with anything. Do the best that you can in life and it sort of follows you back. It's fine. It's a cyclical thing. But if you think you're not worthy or whatever, then it's usually something you're trapped in the past. So I'll come back to that in a minute. Okay? There's something trapped in your past, and quite often it's a thing of unworthiness. If I deal with anybody, I always start with, I always try and find the major cause behind it. So you'll have people that tell you five different things. Oh, I've got this, you know, I've got a problem with this, I've got a problem with that. And if you keep joining them all together, so start thinking about the issues that you've got and see the common thread that runs between it. And it's usually lack of self-confidence or I'm not worthy. And so many people feel that way. I hope, you know, not a lot of you here do, but it really is a deep-seated thing. And it's a particular thing of women. Guys quite over-exaggerate how good they are, but even that is a sort of like, they don't believe they're that good, so they have to build on it, to add to it, to say, well, I'm really good, to make themselves think they are good. And women do the opposite, they run themselves down. I ran a course for people training in self-employment, I interviewed over 2,000 people, and virtually it was 50-50 split of men and women. And every guy that came along gave me some bullshit about how good he was, and every woman ran themselves down, every single one of them. It was just amazing. And when I interview people for jobs in the future, I actually added 20% to whatever a woman told me and deducted 20% of what a guy told me. And it balanced it out because it was reality then. So there is a lot of this sort of self-deprecation and all that. And it's a very British thing as well, isn't it? We're sort of told not to brag about things or not to make anything of what we're doing because some, you know, big bogeyman will stamp on you or whatever. There's some sort of thing about, you know, you'll be too big for your boots, blowing your own trumpet, all sorts of bits like that. And about ego, I keep reading things about ego and I keep thinking, in all the treatments I ever do, I have never pinpointed that it's somebody's ego. Never anything to do with anything. It just doesn't ever appear in my reckoning of things. Right? So I help people with a lot of different things, never about ego. Right.
How does that relate, Stephen, about if the blokes, like you said, think they're brilliant and they walk in there and that's what they think about themselves, yeah, and that you were doing that interview and the women thought negatively about themselves. I've just missed a point. Where did you come in at deducting 20% off the guys and adding 20% onto the women? Because if they thought that they were...
They weren't projecting it, though. It's almost like a... I need to project this because I'm not that. And I can read through that very quickly in people.
Because how do you know what they're thinking? Because you just said...
Also what they told me. I would have somebody come along and they'd say, well, I teach marketing on this course. And they would say, oh, I know everything there is about marketing. And I'd say, oh, brilliant. Because I've only got a certificate in it. And he'd go, well, my uncle's got a market store.
Right.
So you,
yeah, okay.
So they never were able to back up the confidence that they had.
Yeah.
But then, that's one of the best examples of a male. The best example I had of a female was a woman who did the sort of like,
yeah,
can I come on the course, please, and all this. And then she said, I've only got a master's degree in marketing. And I went, I'm teaching the course and I've only got a certificate. And she went, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And she picked up. But yeah, everybody was playing down. All the females were playing down what they did. All the guys were boosting what they did.
Yeah, thank
and,
you.
Yeah. When I do therapy with people, I'm very astute and I watch them as well as listen to them. And sometimes language is there that triggers them off for things. So I'll spot a word when somebody's upset about something. The easiest example is a woman who had arachnophobia. And she came to see me and said, I said, what's wrong? And she said, I've got a phobia. And she couldn't even say the word. But normally what happens is somebody will tell me something and they'll tell me lots of different things and they'll tell me lots of bits of the story. But the bit that really hurts them, there'll be a split second where they almost cry. And I'll spot it. And it's probably a hundredth of a second. And they don't actually get around to crying, but I spot it. And then when I talk back to them, I'll actually tell them things. And they'll say, who told you that? You know, or they think I'm psychic or something. And I go, no, you just told me it. And they'll go, well, I didn't say it. And I say, well, no, I didn't say you said it. You told me it. So it's a lot of things. It's body language and everything else, but it's not body language in the formal bit of, you know, that means you know, it's none of that. It's just the way they react to me. And I'll repeat back in as... So if I see a trigger word in the sentence, I'll actually repeat that word back and see the reaction, and I'll put it in the sentence so I see if they react in the same way. And then it just tells me what's wrong with them. And it's quite often it's something they'd never even thought about. Okay, so the first thing of all is acceptance. So accept where you are today. So if there's something from your past that's troubling you, and quite often it doesn't come across as an accurate thing, it's just a feeling of, you know, something's not quite right. It can be some major trauma in your life, and I deal with a lot of people, and it's child abuse and sexual abuse and all sorts of things. Strangely, it's very easy to deal with. I usually deal with people in one session that's between 3 to 5 hours, and I change their life around in that time, because it's quite simple to deal with. It's because it's set this loop up, and somewhere in that loop they've got the wrong idea that they were to blame, or something's sort of happened that shouldn't have happened. There's the injustice of it all. There's all sorts of things. So this thing's going around in their mind. It's not always known by people what the thing in the past is that hurts them. Sometimes it's something that their childlike brain, because when it happens to them, they usually got young, and something happens to them at that stage, and it's so traumatic at that age that the brain goes, let's put this away and never look at it again because it hurts too much. And sometimes I take people back to that, and it's so trivial. It's just unbelievable how trivial it is. But because they're looking at it now as an adult and seeing it as an adult, they can go, oh my God, is that all it is? Sometimes it's so traumatic that the brain won't let them get to it. It won't show them it, because it goes, the last time you did this, it was this. And they know that if they revisit it again, they're going to feel that again. And so I take people back in their own lifetime to see the earliest instance of whatever it is that's really bothering them, the overall sort of feeling that they've got. And if you get them to the year before, they actually, for the first time in life, are not feeling anxiety or whatever, because it hasn't happened to them yet, because they actually are that age then. And then you bring them back to the age that they are. And even if the brain has gone, you know, I don't want you to know what this is, I'll get it to throw it out. Because in your brain, you're holding all these things that you're still trying to work on. And if it's that traumatic, you're not actually trying to work it anymore, you've buried it. But this is the equivalent of preparing fish for your tea and putting the scraps in the bin, and a day later you forget to take the bin out. Somebody comes around and goes, oh, have you had fish? And you go, oh, that was yesterday. And they go, oh, okay. And then you forget. And a few days go by, and now you've got used to the smell of fish in your kitchen. Now it starts to stink your whole house out. But you've got used to it. Right? And it's only when strangers come and go, what the hell's that? So after a while you go, oh, God, it shouldn't still stink of fish. That was 2 weeks ago. So you actually then go to the bin, and you take it outside, and you put it in the trash. Now, the way your brain works, it's no different to reality. If you think about something in such a vivid way, the brain has no idea whether you did it or didn't do it. So when we relive traumas from the past, or old relationships, or things we haven't finished off yet, we're actually going back over it the same way as we did at the time. And I think we've all woken up from a dream where a partner cheats on us. Has everybody been there? Mm. And you tell them off for the next fortnight, or you behave terribly towards them for the next fortnight. Because even though you know it was a dream, there's still, well, if I had a dream about it, it must be up to something. Right? And you can't tell the difference between reality and the brain. Sort of imagining. There's a little bit of you goes, oh, yeah, it was a dream, that wasn't real. But in the back of your head, it doesn't know. And so the idea is that when we revisit something, if we actually fix it, we fix it. And the brain understands it's been fixed. If we go back in time and we throw something out, particularly where we don't need to analyse it and fix it, then I just get people to visualise wrapping it up in silver foil. And then they visualise taking it out of the dustbin. Visualise dropping it in the dustbin. But I incorporate like the smell, so you lift the lid, you smell your dustbin, and you drop the silver. And silver foil is great, because we can all feel that now, can't we? If you all think about feeling silver foil, there's that sort of texture to it. And there's that noise and everything else. And so the more you put all the elements of your brain together with it, when you throw something out, the more vividly the brain then goes, oh, I haven't got that anymore. And as soon as it does that, it stops all those neural pathways from working. And a good demonstration of this is, if you go in your wardrobe, say you've got a bright yellow dress and you never wear it, and every time you look in your wardrobe, you think, oh, bright yellow dress. If you throw it in the dustbin, you don't expect to see it in your wardrobe the next day. Right? So if you saw it in your wardrobe the next day, there'd be this like, whoa, just a minute, where did that come from? You wouldn't be looking for it the next day because the brain goes, I've thrown it out. So if it reappeared, you'd have to go, the hell's that come from? And it's the same if you mentally throw something out. The brain doesn't look for it anymore because it's not there. So you might get something that triggers it off again, but then it would go, oh, trigger, oh, no, we're throwing that out. So it doesn't actually revisit it. The thing is to do, though, to break this loop or this thing searching for something that's gone wrong, is to actually analyse it and analyse it properly. So let's talk about relationships for a moment. If you've been married 6 times to similar guys or similar women, what's the problem there? What is the problem? Is it that all that gender of person are trouble, or is it just you're really bad at selecting them? Because not all women or all men are bad. So if you selected several of them, and you've always selected the bad ones, nothing to do with them. It's nothing to do with that gender. It's to do with your selection of what you think is a good person. And it's probably taken in by the charm initially or whatever, or there's something that triggers you off to get with them, and then still stick with them, and then there's a point where you break off from them. Now, if you go back and analyse that, and you analyse it wrongly, like all that gender is, all men are bastards, or whatever you want to say, which is a common thing, which usually women in the audience go, they are. If you just analyse it in that way, you're actually not analysing it properly. You need to have a good hard look at something. If you want to close this loop up and stop being bothered by it, you know, how did that relationship end? Was it their fault? Was it my fault? Was it our fault? If you keep chewing over that, what good is it doing you? Absolutely nothing. You know? And a bit like this trapped muscle thing of, you know, got pain or anxiety from the past, it's actually saying, I need to get rid of that. Why do you need to keep going back over that relationship, why it ended and how it ended? Just accept that it's gone. Accept where you are now. And start to look at, well, okay, I'm going to go over this, but I'm going to go over it a final time. I'm going to look at it, I'm going to decide what happened. I'm going to decide what lesson to learn, because the only thing you can do about it now is not do it again. So if you've been married the 6 times and then you're married the 7th one, you know, and you haven't sort of thought it through, it's just going to, the same's going to happen again. You're going to get divorced and you're going to want to marry him when this seemingly knight in white armour comes or whatever. It's not going to work. So it's about analysing where you got to. But it's taking individual things. Now, this is simpler than it seems to get rid of it. Because mindfulness gets talked about a lot, and a lot of people struggle with mindfulness because it's trying to empty your mind to actually get to a place where things come in and they don't bother you anymore. And a lot of people struggle to do that. And this is why we tend to do mindfulness in a sort of trance-like state where everything's quiet and we can relax and all that sort of thing. But in reality, when I talked about the phone call earlier, you get the phone call that you either go, oh, brilliant news, or you go, oh my God. Right? You're closing down. So all these messages come in and they're there for a reason. And you can start to decide if something bothers you that you can change it. Every cell in your body hears everything you say. Now, if your best friend or somebody you didn't know said to you the things that you say to yourself, you'd punch them. And you'd be well within your right to do so. Okay? So first of all, we need to start with that negative self-talk that we do. And actually say, why am I doing this? What good comes from this negative self-talk? And all it is some loop that's not finished off, that makes you feel not worthy or whatever, that you're running that program. And that unworthy program says, well, I don't deserve anything. And sometimes it says, well, I must punish myself. So I think we've all done self-sabotage, haven't we, at times? And we just, you we know we should be doing something. We know we want to do something, but we actually can't do it. And then sometimes we deliberately go off the rails and, if it's weight loss, we eat the whole packet of biscuits. And it's almost like, prove it to you then. But who does it prove it to? It proves it to the negative self-talk that says, I can't do this. But we're in charge of it. Because the simple matter of fact is that the conscious brain holds 8 bits of data. Now, if you're not computer buffs, it doesn't matter. So if I told you my phone number now and said, can you hold on to this just while I get to the end in the next sentence? If I told you my phone number 1 digit at a time, you actually would either be able to hold on to the phone number and not listen to me, or you'd be able to forget the phone number and listen to me. But you wouldn't be able to do both. Okay? Whereas the unconscious brain has 100,000 data points, which gives it the chance of connecting any data point with any other data point. And if you work out on how it's like a 3 million to 1 chance of winning the lottery out of 42 numbers, that can be any random thing. If you do the calculation on a human brain, there are more possible connections in there than there are atoms in the universe. Your unconscious brain is limitless. It can do absolutely anything it wants to. And the beauty of it is, although we're in charge of it, it runs us. But if we learn to talk to it, we can actually tell it what we want it to do. But when you tell it what you want to do, you have to treat it in the right way. So although it's all powerful, it's still like this 5-year-old child. Okay? Because that's how it works. It tries to look after mummy or daddy. It's just trying to look after you in every way. It runs your survival system. It's running your heart, your lungs and everything else. Has done since the minute you were born. If you ask it something, if you ask it of something that is in your best interests, it will try and get it for you. If you ask it something that's in your best interests but you've already programmed it with the opposite, you are now fighting your unconscious, 100 trillion data points, with your 8 bits of consciousness. Which is why it never works. And willpower only works when there's an overpowering desire in those 8 bits of consciousness that you then send to the back of the brain and go, this is what's happening now. You're absolutely determined about it. Therefore, you're not fighting 8 against 100 trillion. You're actually using the back of your brain to sort it out. That's the only time where... So, this willpower works. Because you have to have such a good argument to override all the things you've done. So when you talk to this small child, and I'm going to get you to talk to your own unconscious in a minute. Is everybody all right with that? Okay. When you talk to this small child, first of all, you treat it like you would one of your own children. Okay. If you tell it anything negative, it will try and get the negative thing for you. Now, those of us with kids or grandkids or whatever, a small child's going to put its finger in a socket. If you now say, don't put your finger in that socket, you're going to end up with an electrified child. Because it will. It'll go, now, why mustn't I do that? And then it goes, ah, that's why. And it might learn from that if it survives. Okay, but if you actually say, oh, your favourite toy's over here, they then get distracted long enough to go, oh, okay. Right. But if you then talk about, whatever you do, don't shove metal objects in those PowerPoints, they will do it at some point. Right? And it's the same with your unconscious mind. If you tell it anything negative, it will get that for you. Right? So the easiest one is, I've dealt many years with weight loss, and one of the things that people do is they'll realise, or something will spring in the mind, like chocolate biscuits in the cupboard. The next thought must be to cancel that out. That goes, I mustn't eat the chocolate biscuits. Yeah? So we end up doing this thing where we go, chocolate biscuits in the cupboard. Mustn't eat the chocolate biscuits. Right, you've actually just said chocolate biscuits. chocolate biscuit, chocolate biscuit. If you take the negative word out, the mustn't, because your unconscious sort of works in images rather than things, so you've just conjured up a picture of a chocolate biscuit. Now, have you all got a picture of a chocolate biscuit in your mind? Right. Try and think of not chocolate biscuit. Right, you can't. All you can do is think of something else, but you can't think of not chocolate biscuit. So the moment you go, chocolate biscuits in the cupboard, that's brought the chocolate biscuits into the mind. Now, mustn't eat them. You are now conjuring up a picture of eating them to get the not bit. And then you end up going, no, mustn't eat the chocolate. Mustn't eat the chocolate biscuits. You get in the cupboard and you go, I'll just have the one. Just have the one. Mustn't eat the whole packet. Whole packet. Whole packet. Whole packet. Whole packet. Oh, I didn't bloody mean to eat the whole packet. I mustn't eat the new packet. Oh. And off we go. So you can't actually put in the knots. If you find yourself actually saying something to yourself that's negative, you have to realise that you need to flip it over to the positive. And say, well, what do I want? If I can't have a chocolate biscuit, well, what do I want? Perhaps I'm thirsty, or a glass of water. Perhaps I need company. Perhaps I'm just bored. Do something about it. But you definitely don't want the chocolate biscuit. I don't want to hit that tree. I'm skidding now. I don't want to hit that tree. You look at the tree, you stare into the tree. You play golf, you go, mustn't hit the water, mustn't hit the water. Straight in the water. Okay. So we have to go, oh, right, I want to be on that green over there, right, that green over there. Forget about the water, green over there. Off it goes. Nice and neat. So, the other thing that happens is, although we're talking to our unconsciouses all the time, and although we get this sort of head thing that goes, I'm this, I'm that, or the other, we actually don't realise that we're talking to it. So when I talk to the unconscious with anybody, I always thank it for everything it's done so far. Because every day it does hundreds of thousands of jobs. Right? And so when we give it another job to do, like learning how to do the clutch and all that, once we've done it and we pass it over to it, it just goes another job. I'm doing 100,000 jobs already. Another two won't hurt me. But your conscious bit goes, oh God, I've got that thing to do. Oh God, then there's that other thing. And you're running these programs in your head. And if you've got 10, 15 things on at the same time, which most women do, right? Guys do, me go to work, me make money, me put it on table, done. Most women do virtually everything. So if you've got 10, 15 things going on in your mind, the first thing that comes to mind will be, oh God, it's more urgent and important than it actually is, because it's sprung into your mind, so I must need to deal with that. And you'll also think it through as though you did it. So you almost do it everything twice. So you think about doing it, you think what you need to do and how you need to do it. And then by the time you do it, it's almost automatic, but you're having to do it physically then. And so if you've got 15 things going on in your mind and you say, right, I need to stop all this, you know, like meditation, so I need to stop all these things happening, you've now got 16 things going on because you've got the instruction to stop it as well. So when you learn things like meditation, it will be, don't try and stop it, let it pass through. See it like a cloud, just going through. It makes no difference to you. Right? So, I'm going to get you to talk to your unconscious in a few moments. And all I'm going to get it to do is give you a yes to prove to you that it exists. But I'm going to give you a yes in such a way that you're absolutely certain it's your unconscious and it's not just you. So if I just get you to all go, have I got an unconscious? And you all go, yes. That doesn't prove anything, does it? So is everybody capable of standing up? Okay. Now, can my glamorous assistant come from the back now? Okay. I'm going to talk to you in a few seconds. I'm going to talk you through this, but I'm just going to show you a little demonstration of it first. Okay. So, what I want you to do is, not at this very second, but when you're ready, is to put your feet virtually together and get to the point where you're just in a balanced state. And I want you to look slightly above head height to whatever you can see, fix on a point on the wall, just so you're sort of quite nicely balanced. Okay? And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask your unconscious to actually give you a sign for yes. But I want it to be in such a way that it's like, like that or that, or side to side or whatever. Whatever it chooses, I want it to give you a yes that's so definite you cannot think it is anything else. Okay? So, Trudy does this with me all the time. So, Trudy, thank you, your unconscious, for joining in with us today. Can you just give you a sign for yes that it's joining in with us today? Okay? And it's as simple as that. So, if you're careful, you might want to leave your eyes open or something, but as soon as you feel yourself going back, you can actually stop yourself and open your eyes to do. Okay? But we're just going to get a yes. Okay? And then I'll tell you how you can use these yeses. Okay, you want Trudy to take the baby for a moment?
Yeah.
There we go. The babysitting organised as well. Okay, just be careful of not being too near to the wall. We don't want you to headbutt it. Yeah. It'll catch you, but it might also bang your head. Okay, so everybody in the room now, you're all willing to do this. So this is talking to your unconscious, isn't it? Okay? This is a very simple thing to do. Once you've done this once, you'll be able to do it any time in your life. You'll be able to ask it questions. You'll be able to get yes and no's from it. I always ask for yeses. I never talk about no's, right? Because then it just doesn't give you the sign. Right? So I'd rather keep things on a positive level, because then we're talking positive to a thing that only understands positive. Okay. So thank everybody's unconscious here today in the room. I want to thank it for everything it's ever done for you. All the heartbeats, the blood, the temperature, your pH levels, it's run all that in the background without you knowing about it. It's looked after you in every way, it's run your survival system, it stopped you got killed from running across the road, it does everything for you. I just want your unconscious to understand that we really appreciate your unconscious. And that now we're just going to ask it to give us a sign, just to prove to us personally that it exists. So I'm going to ask for it now to give you a sign for yes, in such a way that you understand your unconscious exists and you can talk to it. So just ask it for a sign for yes. Right? Okay. Work. Everybody got that? Anybody not got that yet? Okay, just wait there for a second. Can you sit down once you've had a yes, please? Okay. No. Okay. Now, I'll just do it personally for you two. Alright? Oh, sorry, no, you're four. You can try and join in on this one, and if not, I'll come and do it. Okay? So, just relax. Just look above my head. Close your eyes for a second. Okay. So your unconscious does exist, because you won't be here. So I just want your unconscious to just give you a yes that it exists, just to show you that you can talk to it. And I want it to do something like backwards and forwards. You're a bit tight, aren't you? Just loosen up. Relax a bit. Okay, this is not you doing anything. This is your unconscious. I just wanted to give you a sign. Thank you. And I just wanted to sit down. Sorry. Just want you to... Yeah? You feel it? No, you're nearly there. Okay. Yeah? You feel it? Okay, sit down. Okay. So you're unconscious. Do you relax? A few deep breaths? All right. Okay. Just close your eyes. Talking to your unconscious now, thank you for everything you've ever done for you. Just understand that there's nothing wrong with talking to your unconscious, because you do it all the time. But now I want you to understand that you need to talk to your unconscious in a different way. And you understand that you'll be nicer to yourself from now on. Okay? I just want you to give you a sign for yes, which could be as dramatic as that or that. And leave it to your unconscious now to give you a sign for yes, as quickly as you can. Yeah. You get it? I saw it. Okay. Did you get that? Yeah. Okay, so everybody here has proved they've got an unconscious mind. I call it the unconscious rather than the subconscious. So if you ever look it up, it will be known as subconscious as well. I call it the unconscious because subconscious means under. It's not under. It's far superior to your conscious. Right? It should be called the epiconscious. It's far above everything that you know. So now that you can talk to your unconscious, you can actually ask it for things. You can be doing things and you can say, you see, to affect the unconscious, you've got to override this old program. And sometimes it's enough to actually say, this is what I trained you to do. It's not your fault that you do it. Right? Because everything we were either born with it or we put it in there. But in the main, we put it in there before we were six. So some of the programs are running. They're our programs. It's not the unconscious programs. We gave it that program. We told it how we wanted to do it. And when we do stupid things like drinking or smoking, we've just formed a habit that we've said to the unconscious, I love doing this. Oh, yeah. I light. Every time I go outside the back door, I light up at work. I really like it. It stops me from being stressed. And we've given ourselves all these excuses that the unconscious has took on board, despite the fact it knows that lung cancer kills. Right? So you've got a massive thing running there that you've trained it to do. So as soon as you want to break a habit or start a new habit, all you need to do is say to the unconscious, I know I showed you this way of doing things, but that was wrong. That was wrong of me. I really don't want that anymore in my life. What I do want is this. So I'd like you to swap that over for me. And when you've swapped it over, just give me a yes, please. And then just stand there. And if it's going to do it for you, it'll do it. And then you'll get the thing, meaning it's done it. You can even do this with things like pain. So in the past, I've talked to people about old pain. Now, new pain is a sign saying, get something done about it. Right? And so if you cut your finger slightly, you get a little bit of pain. But if you slice your finger off, you'll get a hell of a lot of pain because it says, get to the doctor surgery. Right? You break your arm and it hurts like hell. You go to the hospital, you have it put in plaster, it stops hurting. It's still broken. There is no logic in a plaster in your arm stopping pain from a broken arm, is there? Absolutely no logic. But the brain goes, well, you've done all you can now. Yeah? There's even cases of people who try to pull things out of machinery and they've lost an arm and have not felt any pain and they've picked the arm up. I lost my arm. Oh. And they picked the arm up and ran like 5 miles to a doctor's surgery, pumping blood out and all sorts of things. And it's actually known not to give them pain, because if they're in pain, they won't have to run to the doctor's surgery and get it sewn back on again, or live even. Right? So the brain is incredibly good at giving us messages, and one of them is pain. Pain is get something done about it. Old pain from old memories is sort it out. Resolve that problem that you've got going on in the back of your brain. So if you've got old pain or you've got arthritis or something, do you need the message that says, I've got pain? Well, there's no logic behind it, is there? You know, you're restricted already. So if you turn the pain off, you're not going to suddenly start doing marathons, are you? Because you're already in a state where you can't do that. So if you actually talk to your brain and say, is there any need for this pain anymore? I've got the message. I know I've got arthritis, or I've got crumbling spine, or I've got whatever. Can you just turn the old pain off? It doesn't make you go numb in that area. It just turns the old pain off. And if you think about it, if you go to the doctors, they can't do anything about it. All they can do is prescribe strong painkillers. So they're trying to turn the pain off by giving a chemical message to your brain to turn the pain off. So there's nothing wrong with turning old pain off. But don't do it for new stuff. In fact, it won't let it do it for new stuff because it's protecting you. But it can do it for old pain. So, summing up, there's the program that you're running that's bothering you. You need to say, first of all, is it true? Whatever you're thinking, so if it says, oh, well, it's me, I'm a bad person, is that true? And then start to think of counter examples to it. Well, I'm not a totally bad person because I've done this and I've done that and I've done the other, so it can't be true then. And the minute you get away from, is it true, into, well, it's not true, the brain rewires itself. Because you have to believe the thing that's bothering you for it to be effective in bothering you. As soon as you analyse it and put it to bed and say, OK, I'm done with that now, you don't have to chew over it anymore. And in fact, you can say, OK, I've visited this, I've had a really good shot at learning the lesson I need to from it, don't need it anymore. Thank you. And then you can visualise it, be put in the dustbin, you can cut it to bits with a chainsaw or scissors, or but bring all your senses into you so you can feel it, smell it, hear it, the whole lot. You can actually start to destroy old memories, throw them away. Throw them away for the garbage that they are. Because once you've learnt the lesson from it, you don't need it anymore. Okay, I've been Stephen Blake, and you've been a wonderful audience, so much so that I've kept going. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.